Instructional coaches, also known as learning coaches, are now a common part of the education landscape. They have a role to play in helping educators develop professionally, get their professional learning to reflect on their teaching practices, and sometimes just to have someone to talk to about their teaching practices. Of course, that support is needed even more when you go through what is probably the most trying year of your professional life. And during the last year, instructional coaches, like today's guests, Courtney Groskin and Violet Christensen, have been developing ways to help support educators. And as in many parts of the country, we move back to in-person education, many are wondering, what practices can we continue? What did we learn when we had to change everything? And how is that going to help us when we go back to the classroom? Big questions, but of course, Courtney and Violet are here to help us answer them. They've been exploring ways that learning coaches can take the knowledge gained during the pandemic and develop new best practices for the future, pandemic or no. So as we head into summer, it's a good time to reflect on some things we're going to want to do once we get back in that classroom. We'll cover all that. We'll talk about social-emotional learning. We'll talk about self-care, and we'll even include some good tech tips along the way. So get excited, because that's all coming up in this meeting of the EdTech Club. And it all starts right now. Hey, everyone, and welcome back to another meeting of the EdTech Club, the podcast from TCEA. I'm your club sponsor, Andrew Rausch. This week, as I said, two guest speakers, Violet Christensen and Courtney Groskin, instructional coaches from Colorado, who are going to take us through some of the lessons they've picked up in the last year and how they want to carry those best practices forward in the future.
I'm Courtney Groskin. I'm a learning coach in St. Vrain and also a co-host of Connecting Coaches Cognition podcast.
Hi, I'm Violet Christensen, and I am a learning coach as well in St. Vrain Valley School District, and I am the other co-host to C3 podcast. Thank you for having us.
We're really happy to have you. And you are both learning coaches, or instructional coaches, sometimes it's called. That's a relatively new role in education. If it was around when I was a kid, I wasn't aware of it. But it's definitely around now, and it seems to be a growing field. So for people who maybe don't get to interact with people in your role a lot, how would you describe what a learning coach or an instructional coach does?
To me, an instructional coach or a learning coach is someone who really just helps support educators through whatever mode they are. We want to help them to be able to have clarity in their thinking and be able to reflect on their practices, plan for best practices, and really just be able to help them calibrate their thinking and support them in their journey to support their students.
Yeah, we hear a lot about how teachers are basically under-resourced a lot of times. And even when they might have the right tools at their disposal, or the funding to do the kinds of projects they want, they may not have the time or the energy to go out and find certain kinds of solutions that work for them. Is that kind of the space that learning coaches are filling?
Yeah, I think it's really a thought partnership. You know, we go in to really help people elevate and shift that cognition and give them a place and a space and time to really think through their instruction and kind of pause. The power of that pause, you know, because teachers are on the run. They're asked to do so many things. So providing, you know, that appointment time on their calendar, and that's their dedicated time to kind of think through and take a breath and look at how things are going and where they might want to shift some practice.
And I suppose in that role, then, you also get to see and hear a lot of, well, not complaints, but a lot of the challenges that teachers are running into, that maybe they don't have a conduit to go to administration to talk about, or they don't have other ways to work out these issues. You must kind of be able to get a lot of that frontline information, even if it's anecdotal, about how teachers are going about their work. And of course, one thing that we know has changed their work has been the coronavirus pandemic. Obviously, there was a big switch to remote learning in most places, and it's shifted back slowly in many places, and not as slowly in other places. But we know that looking forward to the next fall semester, the coming school year 21-22, we're going to have to think a lot about what happened when we were all forced to flip and blend our classrooms. So you've been able to learn about how teachers have dealt with this. You talk about how what coaches are doing in one way is helping share best practices, but all the practices we had got changed. So give me kind of the overview, your take on what you've learned about how educators are approaching teaching during the pandemic, and then we can get into maybe what the lessons we can take forward.
Some of the changes that I have just seen is there was just this remarkable moment of everyone had to raise their bar. Everyone across the board, no matter how deep their practices were with blended practices or technology usage or just instructional best practices, they all had to be elevated because there were so many restrictions, whether we were hybrid or remote or back in person and spaced out. Some of the things that our teachers really relied on in their back pocket or as strategies that always worked for them, they had to start shifting and they had to start adapting. And just like everyone, some people adapt quicker or less quickly, depending on who they are. And so helping them through that cognition to be able to have clarity around what are they doing and why are they doing it and what do they want their students to know and be able to do. We just had to think flexibly. And a lot of times it came back to, okay, well, how did you do it regularly last year in a pre-pandemic state? And how can we transform that same practice into whether it's a hybrid or a virtual or spaced out format, but just being able to get past the ick, if you will, of the situation at hand and being able to press forward into the production of something useful and an instructional flow or an instructional practice that will work for them. And sometimes it was just stepping back to have some time to think about it. I had one of my educators who always used call and responses in the classroom. And that was something that he relied on in his kindergarten room quite heavily. Once he had gone through online for so long, he almost forgot that that was just a best practice. So when they're back in person, he's like, guys, you got to listen to me. Come on, kiddos, we got you. And it was like, hey, maybe if we just use that call and response again. And when we had some coaching sessions, he realized, he's like, I just need to pull those back out. I totally forgot about them. So for them, just being able to step back and have a thought partner and somebody who's willing to support them, whether that be in listening, coaching, co-teaching, or collaborating, just having that small shift for them is so huge, I feel like, in this time of them being able to press forward.
Y'all have co-written an article on this topic. We'll link to it, of course, in the show notes, the top 5 instructional coaching practices to carry forward. So as you have been working to gear up teachers, classroom teachers, for back to new normal, as we have been calling it, I guess, you maybe have been reflecting on your own practices. So what have you learned about coaches and what they're going to need to do as we move forward?
I think it's really making that shift from consulting. We did a ton of consulting when COVID first hit because it was just a matter of, okay, we're hitting the ground running. We have to get people ready. So really falling back into that coaching mindset of being that guide on the side, and asking those deep, meditative questions and helping teachers to kind of push and elevate, but really going back and honoring the role of coach and that shift in cognition.
One of the things you point to, the first thing on your list, is video coaching. I think that was probably an obvious thing when everybody had to leave their campuses. Everybody says, oh, we got to figure out a way to have a video meeting. And everyone did. It just happened. But you suggest perhaps using that tool moving forward. So what's the thought process behind that and what's the benefit?
So we were really fortunate to have been using the video platform Athena before COVID hit. We use it as part of our induction process with new educators. So it was something as coaches we already had in our toolbox and then kind of brought to the forefront of using with teachers across the board. And that's something I think is so valuable because we know the best practice is if you can view yourself on video and coach through it, you're going to have like a 90% implementation change just with the shift of having that video there. So I would love to see, you know, teachers got over the fear of being on video. That used to be a big hurdle for us of like, hey, do you think we could capture some video? What's going on? You don't have to be the focus. That used to be our angle, but teachers are so comfortable now of being on video because they did it for so long that they don't think twice now when you're like, hey, can we capture some video? It's second nature. So I think moving forward, it's going to be really easy for people to make that jump of being reflective through video coaching practices.
Will that have a kind of, I mean, I'm thinking about people showing back up to their campus in the fall. Is there a sense that some people will say, well, we don't need these video things anymore? I mean, what would the reaction be to that? What's the benefit of video in once again, face-to-face world?
I actually have seen more excitement around it than ever. Just because of the fact that the trepidation is gone of being on video. And now they are really, they've had such monumental jumps in their instructional practices that they're wanting to watch their game tape. They're starting to understand the power of seeing just even 5 minutes of their instruction, how many things that they notice that they couldn't actually comprehend while being the maximum multitasker that every teacher is while in the motions of teaching. So for them to actually have the time and space to stop and actually just look at it. And even when it's just between them and themselves of looking at that video with an Athena and just making their own comments, I found richer reflecting conversations coming out of that every single time. And I have more teachers asking to jump into this because they're hearing the buzz about this new model of coaching and doing lesson studies and being able to elevate your craft.
Yeah. And a lot of, educators go do observations when they're training. Sometimes it's in person. Sometimes it is video. And I can see the appeal of, as you say, kind of watching your game tape, right? I think anybody who has been in a classroom educator, but anybody who's ever, performed music or dance or acting on stage knows that feeling, or public speaking for that matter, knows that feeling of getting off the stage and thinking, did I do what I was supposed to do? I can't remember a moment of that. And I can only imagine a classroom teacher has that all the time, that sense of I was instructing, I was also watching people the whole time and monitoring their behavior and thinking about the things I have to do during my next break. And I was speaking, and I hope I said all the right things. And this maybe gives that sense of, and not only yourself, but others who maybe have good practices, gives you that sense of, as you talk about, going back, taking a moment to reflect, which is kind of at the core of what a coach wants an educator to do, right? Another thing you talk about related to this is building a rapport with educators in a digital space. So this feels like a natural outgrowth of, okay, we've gotten used to using video, maybe we're a little bit more into it. But what does it mean? I guess part of the question is why build a rapport in a digital space? What might, you know, cause you to need to do that? And then also, what's a good way to do that? Now, and I imagine that coaches are thinking all the time about how they nurture their relationships with the teachers they work with.
Well, we come from a cognitive coach training. So building rapport with our coaches, no matter what environment we're in, is really important. So that way we can see when that cognitive shift is occurring. So being able to be comfortable and develop those nuances is much easier in person. And then there's kind of, you know, a twist in the virtual world. You can only see someone from the waist up and you can't read all of those body language cues as well virtually. So it's really important to kind of norm yourselves and get comfortable in this digital space. So that way, as those cognitive shifts are happening as a coach, you can kind of read where they are. And where you can kind of push and, you know, dive in a little deeper with them.
And I feel like with this practice, it's almost twofold of you have to be really intentional in that space and paying attention to the tone and the facial gestures, as Courtney's saying. But also, it helps us to build rapport on a bigger global scale because we are no longer bound by time and space. If I have a teacher who needs to meet with me on a Wednesday and I need to be at a different specific site, yes, I see them in person and I build on that rapport and relationship, but we can maintain that through WebEx or through Zoom or any video platform and still be able to have a rich coaching conversation. And what I've found is it almost gives you a different tone when they are into the screen. They can't be distracted by the papers they need to grade. They're not looking at the mess that Billy made in the corner that they might need to be picking up. They actually have more laser-like focus into the coaching conversation at times. So it's harder for us to build the rapport physically with them, but sometimes mentally you can build that bridge even quicker in this time and space.
Yeah, that's a good point. When somebody's talking at you on your screen, you don't get to like shuffle your paperwork very much, right? You know, I think that's interesting. Do you find that there are, I mean, you mentioned that educators are getting a lot more used to video conferencing and all sorts of video and digital spaces, but do you find that there are challenges that you know, you've found ways to address in terms of how to build that rapport or whether it's trickier sometimes?
I imagine it would be trickier if we weren't in the situation we were in, but I think everyone embraced the idea of this is the only way we can meet. So we're going to find a way to connect. You know, I coached several teachers that were brand new to our district this year that I had never had the opportunity to even meet in person. And all of a sudden we were meeting weekly. So it was just kind of jump in and get to know them on a personal level, find out what their passions are, who, you know, are they married? Do they have kids? And kind of connect on that level and then take the time to jump into the coaching, but really taking some time to build a relationship, just like you would when you walk in their classroom the first day that they're there. And instead of, you know, hanging the bulletin board alongside of them, you know, you're just on the computer screen and having that conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like the idea that it's also, you know, it's another tool in the kit, right? Like, you give that example of if I have an appointment, a coaching appointment, and I have to be at Andrew Rausch Memorial High School during a certain part of the day, but I have downtime and somebody wants to talk to me, I can conference with them. I can, you know, chat with them and see them and talk to them and get them to focus on me, as you point out, even though they're off at Andrew Rausch Memorial Elementary School or something to that effect. Another tool you talk about and another digital tool we hear a lot about at TCEA is the digital whiteboard. And a good example being, I guess, Google Jamboard, probably the one most people have heard of. But I don't know if everybody knows about these virtual whiteboards or kind of what the best use of them is. So in coaching, how are y'all using these digital whiteboards?
I've seen them used in a multitude of different ways. In the article, we specifically outlined one, which was really a celebration station. I feel like one of the biggest things that we've needed to interject into our coaching this last year is as much positivity as you can possibly put. Keep that light and that energy when even some days were darker. So what we started one of our sessions, we do a professional development called the Inter-District Coaching Collaborative. And so we bring coaches together to intentionally practice our craft and coach one another's and tape ourselves and look at our game tape and be able to elevate our practices. And what we started this time was with a celebration station. So it was just, what was your coaching win of the week or the month? And it was so powerful. And it started that professional development off with such a light because all these bright points are being pointed out and just rolling in the matter of 2 minutes. So we have an entire Jamboard filled with small little sticky notes of various colors and various depths of commentary, but they're all celebrations. And so just being able to set that tone to start a professional development is really huge. I've also used it one-to-one with educators to help sort their thinking when we're coaching. So I had worked with one educator for a full year. He was a newer educator and we were really thinking about, are you ready to kind of take a break for a moment and not have me as that scaffold anymore? And he was sorting his Jamboard into things that he felt like were second nature to him, things that he was still working on and things that just didn't work for him that we tried and things that he still wanted to try. So being able to ideate and come up with lots of ideas collaboratively is really powerful through the Jamboard. I've seen it in just so many different ways, and teachers who utilize it with their students as well in similar fashions, that everyone's voice is heard at the same time and they're all valued. So it's a very powerful tool for both coaching and instruction.
Yeah. And it, you know, maybe even calling it a whiteboard, it was like too soft a metaphor, because, you know, there's a lot of tools you couldn't, I mean, a whiteboard, you could stick things to it with magnets or, you know, with adhesive or tape, and you could draw on it. These you can draw on, but you can put text boxes and kind of virtual sticky notes and lots of different ways to interact. And I can also see using it, you know, it works as kind of a mind map or a note-taking thing if you're working on it individually. But, you know, you point out in a group environment where you have everybody, you know, note one thing that's going well or that they're proud of, I could see how seeing everyone else's wins could inspire people, could also just practically kind of spur them. Like if somebody's win was finally turned in that form, and I think, oh, I did not turn in that form, I'm glad somebody reminded me of that. You know, these are just kinds of things you don't always get the chance to share with your colleagues too. So that the collaborative environment, not just between coach and educator, but between educators, must be somewhat powerful too.
It's powerful in action. Last week, I was working with an entire leadership team for a staff, and they created their entire mission and vision work through it in a matter of a couple hours, because they were able to do the wordsmithing while in separate partnerships throughout the building. It was amazing to watch it happen in real time while in different spaces, so everyone could be comfortable with their level of proximity to one another.
One of the things that comes through as you talk about this is the sense that you have this dedication to supporting an educator, obviously scaffolding them in a learning type way, but also just kind of being a backstop, a support, potentially even an emotional support for people doing a tough job. And so one of the things you point to in the article too is that teachers have to prioritize self-care, another popular thing these days, which kind of boils down to a lot of things we've all known in the past about well-being and health and mental health and, you know, having the space and time to decompress, maybe renew creative energy. What have y'all learned about this sense of teachers and self-care during what for many teachers might be the toughest time in their career yet?
I think really bringing that social emotional health to the forefront. It was, you know, not taboo necessarily, but not something people openly spoke about. And this year, I feel like people really opened up, and there was kind of that camaraderie around like, hey, it's Friday. What are you going to do this weekend for you? Like, I know you're running with the kids and you're doing this, but what are you going to do for yourself so you can come back on Monday and be ready for your students? I've done a lot of reading on how, you know, going through this COVID time, it's trauma that everyone has experienced together. And that's really rare for that occurrence to happen. But I think, you know, it's brought this self-care idea to the forefront. And I think there's still a lot of stigma around like, I don't have time for that. But now it's become a survival thing. I know for myself, like if I don't build out time and set boundaries, I'm not going to be the best coach or the best educator that I can be. So really instilling that in my educators, I ended a lot of my coaching conversations this year of what's something you can do for yourself, what's something you can say no to lighten your load, and normalizing that ability to say no is a huge self-care tip. It doesn't always have to be an activity. Sometimes it's just turning down an opportunity.
I think a lot of educators, if you ask them, would say that it's important for them to instill in their students the idea that they take care of themselves. Maybe it's harder for them to practice what they preach in that sense. Is that something you've encountered as you're coaching educators? Like, you know that this is a useful thing for anybody, but you have to be willing to do it for yourself.
It's that leading by example. It's so easy. You know, educators are great with connecting with their students and helping them to do what's best for them. But then it's like, remember, you're that example. So what are you going to do for yourself as well? And I think that's been a big learning piece too. Like, I'm preaching this to my class that I want them to be healthy and safe and to take care of themselves. But how can I take care of me as well?
Yeah, I can imagine being a student and being told that I need to take care of myself and then thinking, yeah, but my teacher's running themselves ragged. That's just what grownups do, you know, like, so I could see why, you know, that might be a useful kind of lever, you know, a way to flip, kind of say, you have to model this behavior. You know that modeling good behavior is a part of the job, right? So take a break. Another thing, your fifth thing is a little more anomalous, but I think it all kind of builds off of what you talked about. I mean, there's a lot of good tools. There's some good mindsets. And so one of the other things is getting inspiration from your peers and your colleagues, right?
Absolutely. And I just, when we talk about shifts and changes throughout the last year and things we want to pull forward, I've watched teams come together in ways they never have before. You were able to be in your own silo to some degree until this point, and there was not a good way to survive the last year without having a comrade or without having a team or without having your go-to person. If you think about what Courtney was just speaking to with self-care, I can't tell you how many times she has checked me on, but are you shutting down, Violet? Have you clamshelled your computer? Or just asking that simple question of, how are you doing really? Not just how are you doing? And I think the teams that have come together through this and figured out a way to adapt, whether that be that they planned all day Friday if they didn't have students, or whether they use Google Docs in order to be collaborating at night and leaving comments as they're building things together. But it, no matter what their model was, the teams that came together were the teams that actually thrived and really made the most rich learning experiences for their students. And I would agree to that also with coaches, that the coaches that found a team in order to lean in, because we were taking a lot of that emotional burden from our teachers, trying to lift them up and console them in certain ways, that I think the coaches that had a team and found others to connect with and to be able to reflect on their practices really were the ones that thrived. And so as Courtney and I say all the time, every coach needs a coach, and we are lucky that we have that in our system and that we're continuously trying to build that for other coaches.
So looking forward, how would you, as a coach, thoughtfully remind educators that they should keep that teamwork going? I guess what I'm asking is there a concern that maybe there'll be a withdrawal, a kind of sinking back into old habits as we get back to something that looks more like the old way of teaching?
I think, you know, we all fall into our comfort zones, but I think when they look back on how much the collaboration moved them forward or what they're able to learn from their peers, I think it's going to be a natural trajectory to want to find that common time to meet. And we even had a unique circumstances where our grade level teams this year didn't have common planning time and they still found time to meet. So I imagine when we go back to our regular schedule, when they do have that time, they're really going to leverage it because they truly saw the power, you know, in the hardest of teaching times. They leaned on each other. So I see them naturally just falling back into that. Like, if we use this during tough times, why wouldn't we use this during our regular teaching time to grow as professionals?
And I guess that's the mindset behind a lot of these practices, right? If it served us well in the toughest time, it's probably going to work okay when things are closer to a not tough time, let's say. I'm doing a lot of hedging there, but I think that makes sense.
Well, and they have all these amazing collaborative tools to not just have to do it during the school day. They can have a video chat at night if that works better for them, because they've got to run out the door to get little kids after school, or hop on that Jamboard and fill it out when they have a second. And I think that in itself is that they've developed all these tools in their toolkit of how to collaborate in different spaces other than that face-to-face common shared plan time is going to be transformational in itself.
Well, I won't take up too much more of your time, but I will tee you up. If there's a message you want to make sure you get out, something you forgot to mention, or you just want to let folks know how they can interact with you, find you online, and listen to your show, let us know.
Well, we obviously, as we mentioned before, are both co-hosts of C3 Connecting Coaches Cognition podcast. So we'd love for you to follow us at C3 Coaches on Twitter, or else I am at VH Christensen on Twitter, or you have at Miss Groskin at Twitter as well here. And we are just really excited to jump into another year of the Interdistrict Coaching Collaborative and continue our podcast and working on other great learning opportunities for coaches and educators.
All right, I can see you eyeing the clock. Indeed, the bell is going to ring soon, but don't forget you got a little bit of homework. Go ahead and check out the links, the show notes for this meeting, this episode of the EdTech Club, including the article we referenced written by Violet and Courtney and their podcast, Connecting Coaches Cognition, C3. Go check that out in the show notes. Of course, keep up with all things EdTech by following TCEA on your favorite social media platform, by keeping up with our Tech Notes blog over at blog.tcea.org, and of course, by subscribing to the EdTech Club. And once you've done all that, if you're looking for even more extra credit, well, that's okay. Go check out the events. Coming up this summer, we've got all kinds of amazing professional learning events from TCEA going all the way into next fall, including our Google Summer Camp that's going to give you the tools to master Google and put it to use for you. So check out the details. That's all over at our Internet World headquarters, tcea.org. Just look for events. And that's it for this week, but of course we will be back with another episode of the EdTech Club next week. So until that time, I'm Andrew Rausch. Thanks for being part of the club. EdTech Club is a production of TCEA. To learn more and to join, go to tcea.org.